for the zombie takeout is lovely, dark, and deep. But I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. Do you hear me, Uncle John? And miles to go before I sleep.
What's up? Welcome to episode 299 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, because this is going to be a long one, on to this week's movie, which is from 2007, Grindhouse, concluding our action trilogy. And what a way to go out.
This turned into a quadrilogy, I feel.
Yeah, kind of. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by trailers. They're not just for real movies anymore, until they are.
And also brought to you by Peg Legs, your introductory go-go dancer pirate accessory. Ask about our Gatlin upgrade. All right, so there are trailers that I missed.
I saw them. I have some notes. I'll talk about them later.
And then we start the Planet Terror, which... as long as it was, they pretty much cut to the chase very quickly to set up what's going on. They are on a military base, and some nefarious dealing is going on here. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, a toxin gets released into the atmosphere. Oh, no.
And just for the Lost fans out there, because I know you're not, the evil scientist was played by Naveen Andrews, a.k.a. Saeed. So that was fun.
I thought he looked familiar, but because I didn't watch Lost, I didn't know where exactly he was from. But what was weird was he was evil, but then turns out to not be evil.
Oh, yeah, because he realizes what he did and he wants to fix it.
So,
you're burying the lead, though.
everyone turns into, well, not everybody, but a lot of people turn into zombies.
Well, that wasn't the lead I was talking about. His little collection.
Oh!
The title of this episode?
Well, right. You know, I mean, yeah. He had a very weird obsession with testicles.
Anyone who wronged him, he would castrate them and collect their testicles in a jar.
Yeah, and walked around with the collection, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Kind of odd, I thought. Mm. But anyway...
you gotta have a hobby.
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody needs a hobby. So, we have the zombie apocalypse. And, you know, it wasn't until we were discussing this movie beforehand that I realized I've made the mistake again of getting the crazy director's cut and European thing. Mm-hmm. How long was your version?
It was 3 hours and 11 minutes.
Yeah, but how long was your Planet Terror?
Oh, about an hour and a half with the opening trailer, which was just Machete. So you've seen it.
Yeah.
Is it Machete or Machete?
I think it depends on your accent. Okay. But anyway.
Anyway, that was the only trailer before Planet Terror. So you saw that one. You didn't miss anything.
So I guess to summarize Planet Terror, we've got your zombie apocalypse. They do a unique thing, though, because they set... a lot of it in a hospital, which is, I don't recall a zombie apocalypse movie having that setting where they're dealing with the people who are coming in infected and running around like apeshit.
It's usually just running around the city trying to kill zombies.
Right. So instead, where all the sick people are, and in the middle of this, there's so many subplots just... shoehorned in. You've got the doctor and his wife having marital problems, and they're, you know, she's leaving him. You have this tow truck guy with the mysterious past who the cops just won't give a chance to, you know, explain himself or whatever, even though crazy shit is happening. They're not trusting him.
And it was great to see Rico from 6 Feet Under turn into an action star.
That's where he's from. Son of a bitch. And I'm trying to think of the other subplot now. There was...
the stripper who was with Rico.
Ray. The go-go dancer who used to be Ray, the mysterious stranger. Mm-hmm. And so they have these other characters, of course, spun out from this too, mm-hmm. where, you know, the doctor's wife's father is like a sheriff in town. And
the commissioner, I think. The sheriff was the cook's brother.
Okay, yeah. And then, there's the cook with his winning barbecue recipe and trying to put his place on the map. Mm. So many things shoved into this hour and 45.
And in the middle of all this, just after a sex scene, we lose about 10 minutes.
That, which I thought... was fucking brilliant. Oh, yeah.
So they come back after this, you know, these reels that are missing.
Right. Sorry. They're just in this sex scene. They're ready to really go at it. And then, of course, reel missing. Sorry, management. You know, Rose McGowan.
Yeah.
You can't see her.
And we come back and about 20 people have been added to the group.
Well, yeah. You
Most of which back. Are attractive young women.
Hold on. We come back. I don't think people have been added because we've seen all those people in one part or another.
I'm guessing they were dancers who were hiding out now with this group, but we hadn't seen them before.
We had the babysitters. We had the cop who was covered up, but now she's like exposing midriff bra. But no, we come back from this reel. You know, they're in the middle of the sex scene or just about to begin it, really. The place that they were hiding out was going up in flames. Mm-hmm. They revealed his mysterious past, but don't explain what it is.
No.
Which had me fucking dying. Like this, you know, this, we're really building this secret up thing. It's like, oh, well, now I know, now since you told me who you are.
I think the Sharknado movies borrowed a lot from this.
So, right, everything is just fucking up in the air. They're then doing this Mad Max thing to get back to the hospital so he can save his woman and just... Oh, no, wait, they already had her. So that's when they do the leg thing, which Sharknado totally stole from this. The peg... Well, of course... They took this from Evil Dead in the arm.
Well, I mean specifically with Sharknado, just the ridiculous humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very Sharknado, which it was kind of unfair watching this after Sharknado, even though this predates it by about 6 years. Because, you know, I kind of got my fill with Sharknado. So it didn't quite go over as well as it would have if I had seen this back in 2007.
So yeah, my only problem, I think we could say hilarity ensues.
Yes, hilarity ensues. Like, they try to escape the zombies. There's lots of cars and violence and guns and yada yada. It's a zombie movie. They blow up the facility. They confront the evil general or military guy who's trying to, you know, turn the rest of the world into zombies. Yada yada.
Well, that was the other bizarre thing. Bruce Willis, you know, gives this whole dramatic speech at the end.
Bruce Willis is the actual villain.
Right, he's the villain, and he gives this whole dramatic speech at the end about them being like, you know, they were heroes, and yet they were screwed over, and hilarity ensues.
Now, right at the beginning, before the trailer for Machete, there's this music for the coming attractions that, I so remember from the 70s and early 80s. It's this little like horn riff that if you were alive, then you know it cold.
I think I can't remember if it was Ron and Fez or if it was just Bennington. They used that as rejoiner music for like a few years at least. One of the weirdest things about Bennington is they have a set amount of rejoiners that they use over and over again every day. I don't understand it. But yeah, well, that was one of them.
But then we get into the Machete trailer. And I loved his character in Desperado, and Machete is just like that character amped up.
Yeah.
So I want to see Machete now.
Of course, me too. I can't believe we haven't done it you know, up until now. I wonder if Cheech Marin is in that too.
Probably. I think he's worked with Rodriguez before.
Because at first, Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
But, you know, first of all, watching, I'm like, oh, that priest looks like Cheech Marin. Wait, that is Cheech Marin.
But he does the whole thing where he opens up the coat like in Machete, like in Desperado, and he's got all the knives, except in this case, they were all machetes. Instead of like all throwing knives and little ones.
Was Don't in the beginning as well? Or
no, it was just Machete and then into Pontera.
Okay, so Don't was in the middle?
Yeah. It was between the movies.
Ah, damn it. I knew there was going to be stuff in between.
Yeah, most of the trailers were between the movies. Now, the time period was a little interesting in these movies. Because they look like 70s, early 80s, which is when the whole Grindhouse thing was happening. But
I think it would have been better if it was set in the 70s or 80s. Yeah. I don't understand why they had to set it in the modern
time. Yeah, they set it today, which really confused me when I saw modern cell phones here and there.
Yeah.
Although the first clue as to the humor of this movie that I didn't really catch at the time, I just have it in my notes as kind of a weird flub. There's a sign that says military base 2 miles. Just military base. It's that vague.
Right.
Also, it's interesting that each movie has a character named Abby, and one's a guy and one's a girl.
Oh, that's right. I didn't notice that.
There's in this Naveen Andrews character, the scientist is Abby, just called Abby. And in Death Proof, Rosario Dawson's character, I think it's Abernathy is her full name, but she goes by Abby.
And I love the use of the hospital in both.
And Dr. Block, Dakota Block, the wife. She had a brief role in Death Proof.
Right, to let you know that this took place before the zombie apocalypse. Yeah.
Now, one thing this movie taught me, Josh Brolin has even less range than his father. I've seen him in a few movies now, and he's always the same guy.
He's never different than this guy.
Exactly.
This is every movie he's in.
At least James Brolin. I mean, he was kind of pigeonholed, but he's still with us. He's actually got a show now. But he's got some range. He can do drama and comedy and you know, do quite a bit, even though he's not considered to be a very, you know, wide-ranging actor. Josh is even worse.
Well, we could say, you know, this is Uncle John and Josh Brolin.
Exactly. Incidentally, a bit of trivia. During filming, he asked Robert Rodriguez, one of the directors, for a video camera so he could shoot his audition tape for No Country for Old Men. Ended up having his audition shot with a $1 million digital camera that they were using for the movie, directed by Tarantino, with Marley Shelton, Dr. Block, Dakota Block, reading the role of his wife in the scene. The tape was scored and edited by Rodriguez and then sent to the Coens. Their first response after seeing it was to ask who lit the set.
You know what? It would have been great if the Coens had a trailer in this too. Oh, yeah.
I would love to see what they would do for a joke.
Because I mean, that was the thing, them showing it to other director friends and then going, oh, could we make a trailer too?
This movie was the only one of the two that actually had things that caused me to have to move my notes over the screen. Because I typically have, you know, a notepad file of, you know, in the corner of the screen while I'm taking notes, so I can take notes while I'm watching.
I'm going back to Word after this motherfucker, because I have my stupid computer crashing.
Scott's computer restarted forcibly in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, well, actually it was in the middle of Death Proof, so I was more than two and a half hours in.
Yeah. But we get to a scene in the hospital where in the background there are these medical photos.
Oh yeah, you know what? That is the first thing I've seen in the movie in a long time where I was
I caught a glimpse of one of them, grabbed the corner of notepad, and just covered the screen and listened to that scene.
Holy fuck, you were very wise to do that.
Yeah. Because there were a couple of descriptions of other photos, and there apparently were quite a few. I'm really glad I covered them.
And just an abscess is just so fucking evil too. And just to use that whole like they're just covered in them. Fuck.
On the positive side, another thing I learned from this movie, I prefer Fergie as an actor than as a singer. Stacey Ferguson, aka Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas, has a small role. She's actually a decent actor.
You know, I mean, she blended, so yeah, I mean...
I mean, she didn't stand out. I mean, it's a small role, didn't require much of her, but she didn't stand out. So, you know, she did the job, and I enjoyed it. I would like to see her in other roles. Now, one other issue I have with Planet Terror, I think the relationship drama slows it down a bit too much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the main problem I have with it is just too goddamn long. But, of course, I had an extra, like, 15 to 20 10 minutes.
Yeah, probably.
No, it was more like 15. It was more like an hour and 45.
Oh, okay.
With only one trailer.
Yeah. Well, there is only one trailer before it. But, yeah, so you had an extra 15 minutes. Yeah. It just kind of gets in the way. There's this fighting between the blocks. James Brolin and Marley Shelton. It's this married couple of doctors. He's a GP. She's a anesthetist. Is that the word? I can never say it right. She knocks you out.
Yes.
And there was a great gag where she had these three needles that were progressively effective.
It was just so unnecessary to add to this. I mean, now granted, the thing that happened with their kid, I thought was fucking hilarious.
Didn't see that coming at all. I should have, but I didn't.
I was kind of hoping for the Pulp Fiction, you know, windshield splatter thing. Yeah. But, you know, no, they just went with flash of light.
And the whole thing does make you really want to see Brolin's character get eaten.
Right.
Of course he does, but he doesn't die. He becomes a zombie. And he does eventually get killed, of course, because he's one of the villains. Of the zombies, he's the villain.
It just didn't really fit, though, their story in the whole thing. It was, I think Shoehorn is a very good...
Yeah. Another thing that kind of threw me off was the zombies were really intelligent. Like, one picked up a cop and threw him into a police car, like, denting the police car. Another one had a saw moving it towards Brolin's throat until, you know, he ran out of cord. So they could use tools and, like, pick people up and throw them. They could think, which was weird. Brolin, when he's a zombie, can talk.
Well, right. In fact, the way they were having it was that the zombie state was really only a temporary state. That they, if they had the other chemical, they could control it. And if they took the antidote, they could go back to just being people.
Right.
They weren't undead, actually. Mm-hmm. They were diseased.
Yeah. Well, they were infected.
Right.
With this biological weapon.
Exactly. So it kind of puts a new twist to the zombie story.
Mm-hmm. I did think that having Dakota drive with one numb hand and one broken wrist was interesting. Very creative.
Yes, that was one of the more creative scenes of it, too. Trying to drive. I thought she had really broke her wrist when she was forcing the car open, but, you know, I guess not.
Well, yeah, she did break her wrist. That's why it was hanging limp the rest of the time. And the other hand was numb because her husband stabbed her with her needles.
The other hand. Okay.
They were both numb to begin with because he stabbed her with her needles.
Well, right. I know that. But then when she was trying to open the
Yeah, she had to put car, her entire hand into, like, up to the palm, into the handle to get the door open. And she, you know, had her foot against the car to open it. And in doing so, she snapped her wrist.
And she just kept that other hand the other time away and used the good one. All right.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I wasn't tracking it. It wouldn't have surprised me if there was a goof in there and she used the hand that was supposed to be broken.
But it would fit the movie. Once she got the feeling back, the broken wrist was no longer there and she was good to go.
It wouldn't surprise me if they had forgotten about it, you know, midway through. It would fit the movie. As did the fact that, I'm going to blank on the character's name, Rose McGowan's character, the go-go dancer. She left Rico, Ray.
Yeah.
Because he was apparently some horrible asshole and she couldn't live with him anymore.
Right.
But he gives her a ring and then she sleeps with him. I mean, it was obviously a convenience to get to the bit where the reels were missing.
The missing reel. Like, you knew they were going to do the film breaking.
Yeah, of course.
Gag.
Didn't they borrow that from Kentucky Fried? Or was it Amazon?
First time I remember that happening was Gremlins 2, I think.
Okay, I could swear that either Kentucky Fried movie or Amazon Women on the Moon did a similar gag.
Where it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember the Gremlins, like, you see their shadows, and they're it's like they broke the projector, and they just start making shadow puppets and shit on the screen. Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff.
So, of course, like we talked about, you know, we lose all this time, the group multiplies, and the secret comes out, apparently unexplained to us, about why the sheriff hates Ray. And the sheriff agrees to give Ray a gun.
In fact, he said, give him all the guns.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, something so momentous happened to this missing reel. Which, I mean, he stole this from Python, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course.
It was, you know, Mr. Pither's cycling tour.
Right.
Where, you know, he's in front of a firing squad, and they kept missing, and then they go to charge with bayonets instead, and just as they get there, of course, seen missing, and they're like, oh, that was a narrow escape.
But then when they give him the guns, he just starts spinning them. And everybody's so impressed that he can spin these guns. And then they show the female cop in the half shirt. Or it's not exactly a half shirt, but it's an open shirt tied.
Right. And yeah, they've got this whole, like, the whole cast from the movie is now hiding out in this one thing that's on fire.
That I'm going to say the second half of Death or of Planet Terror is where it really got ridiculous.
Right. It's weird because there wasn't setup, but there was too much in between, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This is when we had the tiny motorcycle, which I got a big kick out of, I gotta admit.
Yes.
But I didn't really get all of that until about two-thirds of the way. I think it was right after the tiny motorcycle.
Yeah.
That I finally clicked and, okay, this is Sharknado humor. Well, although this was before Sharknado, of course.
Well, yeah, because they're not telling it in the same tone, you know? They're not, you know, throwing out the same winks that Sharknado is throwing out.
Yeah.
They're putting this with a straight face, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. And it was nice to see Tarantino in an appropriately creepy role for a change.
I think he's a creep in pretty much both, honestly, even though the second one he wasn't as creepy.
The second one's debatable. It's a much smaller role. He doesn't really do much.
Yeah.
And this one, he's very creepy.
Yeah.
And I also kind of found it interesting when Muldoon, Melissa's character, goes full zombie or whatever you want to call him. He looked very trauma.
Oh, there was a ton of trauma in this, of course.
Yeah. Loved the syringe gun. apparently, Dakota has a gun now that can shoot her syringes. Who knows how they came up with that? Must have been in that missing section.
She had something where she was putting them, like, in her garter, or, like,
okay. I missed when she actually got the thing that could shoot them. But, again, that could have been in the missing section.
Yeah, maybe.
And then we get to the point where the movie really kind of jumped the shark for me. The gun leg.
You know what? I actually have in my notes. I look forward to Uncle John's nitpick.
Well, I'm not even going to nitpick it. I mean, I do have that in my notes. Okay, well, just rolling it back slightly. Rose McGowan's character gets attacked by zombies and loses a leg. And for a lot of the movie, she's just got like a metal pole there that she's walking on. And then at some point, Rico, Ray, gives her, it looked like, what was it, an M60?
It was a gun of many purposes, actually.
It was a big gun. It was like an M60 gun, M60-sized gun.
It fired rockets.
Yeah.
It did many things.
And that becomes her peg leg.
Yes.
And, of course, she can shoot it without touching the trigger.
Yes.
And I'm not going to nitpick that in this movie. I didn't notice it.
I can't believe you went there. Yeah, I was like, oh, we're going to hear this one. How could she fire that fucking thing? And then how does it change?
Yeah, yeah. She never runs out of ammo. She never has to reload.
She's got the Chris Lambert thing going. She does run out of ammo.
I think the moment where it really kind of was too much for me was when she used it as a rocket launcher.
Right. What kind of gun just fires rockets?
She's running along, and she needs to get over this fence, and she just kicks it down, and the gun goes off, and it shoots her up over this fence. And then she's pulling all these stripper moves while shooting a bunch of people. She gets into this pose that was another one of her useless talents. She has, like, five useless talents throughout the movie. And then one of her useless talents, of course, gets used while she's shooting. it just kind of lacks the glee that Sharknado has.
Well, right. There isn't glee in this, though. They tell it with a straight face. But, yeah, I thought the end was just hilarious. It just made no sense. Like, he was completely, okay, it'll shoot whatever she wants it to shoot, and however she wants to shoot it. Like, really?
Oh, incidentally, according to Marley Shelton, Dakota, Tarantino and Rodriguez really co-directed Planet Terror. Tarantino was on the set a lot. He had notes and adjustments for the performances. He changed lines every once in a while. So this really was a collaboration.
Yeah. I don't know what Rodriguez did with...
I don't think he had as much of a hand in Death Proof. Also, there was something I have to go back and check out. In Dakota Block's office during Planet Terror, you can see a notepad. Written on it is a checklist. The last item is Kill Bill.
That's good.
And from that point, they just, you know, go after Muldoon, the head of the military, the one who was responsible for all of it, with some help from Abby Saeed. You know, and they blow up the facility and they sacrifice two of them, of course. The brothers have to be sacrificed. And, you know, it leads to Rose McGowan and Dakota kind of leading a band of survivors. It kind of reminded me of Evil Dead. Not Evil Dead.
Oh,
well,
definitely.
Well, Evil Dead, of course. There's a lot of nods to Evil Dead.
Oh, definitely.
It reminded me of Resident Evil is what I was going to say.
I mean, there is no this movie without Evil Dead. Then again, there's no Resident Evil without Evil Dead either.
Rose McGowan was basically Alice.
Yeah.
You know, and that bit where she's leading the survivors at the end was used in practically verbatim in a Resident Evil movie, or two or three of them. Saw the trailer for the new one. Can't wait. Okay, so that's pretty much it for Death Proof for me, or for Planet Terror, rather, for me.
All right, so for Death Proof, you see, we should have had an extra sponsor. second impromptu plot summary. Unsponsored. Can you believe that? Is that a first for zombie takeout
It's
history?
Two sponsors for both, you know. It's one movie overall, you know.
Do we say the sponsors again, then? Do they get second? Do we really want to give those people ad space again?
We don't. Especially those trailers.
Fuck the peg legs. Anyway, sponsored by the Alphanumerically Challenged. All right, so in part two in Death Proof, and I'm seeing like all of these other trailers on the IMDb, and I'm like going, fuck, man, I can't wait to watch them. One's directed by Rob Zombie, one's Eli Roth. And then, of course, there's Hobo with the Shotgun. But anyway.
Well, yeah, which I didn't see. Apparently, that's just in the Canadian version.
So we have another group of young women. One is a local radio personality. Another is an out-of-town guest. We hear entirely too much about their love lives in this, in the version I see.
In a horribly scripted scene. That just felt really fake.
Holy crap. I mean, the first, half hour of this is just,
they just needed business to talk about.
It's quite painful, honestly. Mm-hmm. It just goes on forever. And it's about a whole half hour that could be, but I understand why he did it. He was, humanizing them and making what is to come more meaningful. And so the thing is, they're being stalked, and only one of them kind of has a clue that they're being stalked. The others are just clueless in their own little world, and they eventually meet up with their stalker at this bar, and of course they still don't get it, even though they've seen him multiple times throughout their journey. Which, I mean, we didn't need to see them in a restaurant, but we did. Like I said, my version I saw was almost 2 hours long.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You probably saw more of this than I did.
Yeah.
There was a lot of exposition for it for me, but it was okay because it did humanize them, and it gave Kurt Russell, the stalker, a chance to do some really interesting turns.
Well, right. He does. And, So they're in this bar, they're talking about going to the lake and they're flirting. But they're pretty much so open with their lives that he knows everything they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just, I mean, saying, well, you know, we're going to go to the lake and there's not going to be any boys there and stuff. And so he knows exactly where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
She even gets a lap dance from one of them. And which I don't know. Did you see that? Was that in your version?
No, the lap dance was actually cut. Now I know you've seen the unedited version because it's mentioned on Wikipedia, the lap dance scene.
You know, I won't lie.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm going to hit YouTube and try to find it, I'll admit.
Doesn't really go as far enough as, you know,
whoever
want it. But of course, it's in a public bar, so I can't.
The trailers went much further than the movies in this case.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They did. They did, didn't they? After this, like, 45 minutes of just exposition mm-hmm. for people who are about to get fucking wasted.
You needed to hate the villain to appreciate the ending.
Yeah, so, I guess spoiler? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It is only the first 45 minutes. It is just the setup. But, yeah, and it is kind of shocking.
This part, you don't really need this. This is not a spoiler, but he does that in the middle.
It is kind of shocking how fast
mm-hmm.
he wastes them all.
Right. Because it's kind of obvious that he's going to go after them.
You kind of expect this to be the movie, though. Mm-hmm. You expect this whole thing of him hunting them down and killing them
mm-hmm.
to be it.
And the death scene was spectacular.
It was.
I had to watch it two or three times to really process it.
I wish I could have. It was just... Wow. I mean, he shows it like four times, mm-hmm. of course.
I think it was three, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was three. It was one for each death.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see
right.
exactly what happened to them and how they die. Right. And because what it was, I mean, he, you know, sets it up where he can run them down and, you know, just death by car.
All of the gore Tarantino ever wanted to put into a movie, he put into about 5 seconds.
Yeah, so, all right, after that, we're back in the same hospital as Planet Terror,
mm-hmm.
and of course, because they're both in Austin, yeah. And
the girls are all killed, the killer survives.
And there's, you know, he could really, you know, put a lot of effort into mounting a case against him.
Should mention that the killer is a stunt car driver.
Right.
And his car is quote-unquote death-proof.
He has a stunt car. And in this half of the movie, it's mm-hmm. death-proof, and it's a stunt car, and it's awesome. When he goes after New Prey, it's not as good.
No. Well, it's presumably a new car, because he kind of wrecked the last one.
Yeah, I guess that's what it was. He didn't have the same car. It wasn't quite as death-proof. But let's just say in the next group of girls he goes to stalk,
mm-hmm.
one of them... two of them are stunt women.
Two of them are stunt performers. One of the actors is actually a stunt performer.
Right. That's why I kind of figured it out after a while. I'm like, hey, where is she? And it's like, oh, he's got her. You know, he brought in a rigger.
They needed it for that scene.
Of course. Amazing stunt work.
Mm-hmm.
And just this.
He goes after a new group. Two of them are stunt performers. One of them's an actor. Two of them are actors, I think. One of them's left behind. With a guy who you think is going to be creepy until the real shit goes down and you forget about the potentially creepy guy. Actually,
well, yeah,
they've
yeah.
completely forgot about him. I would like to have seen when they returned the car.
Yes, I would have too. What happens when they return the car? They get this this crazy-ass chase scene where they fight back, of course.
One of the greatest action scenes, possibly the greatest action scene I've ever seen.
It could be.
It was amazing.
We're not used to seeing real stunts anymore.
Yeah. Which is a point he makes in the movie.
I mean, hilarity ensues,
by the way. Yeah, let's just, yeah. Rolling it back a little bit just because trailers. We have Werewomen of the SS, which I swear is better than anything in Kentucky Fried Movie.
God damn it.
I think the actual trailers are better than the movie. Thanksgiving, which had to have inspired Thanksgiving. It's about a killer who goes after people on Thanksgiving.
Well, wait a minute. Thanksgiving.
It was 2009. This was 2007.
Holy shit. Okay.
And then we have Don't.
Which I did get to see, and that was fucking hilarious.
And the whole shtick is, you know, don't go in the cellar, don't do this.
Don't do anything.
Don't. Is that the trailer with the trampoline death scene? I think that might have been Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't remember a trampoline death.
There's a girl on a trampoline and a killer under the trampoline with a knife, and do the math.
A guy with a diaper and just all sorts of insane shit.
I have to rewatch Don't because I don't remember it exactly as well as I would like to.
Well, how could you? It's just like, you know, fast cuts, you know, over and over again.
Now, in the credits for Death Proof, I noticed the name Sidney Poitier.
Yes, I noticed that coming up. I'm like, Sidney Poitier is going to be in this.
I assumed it was the famous Sidney Poitier.
So did I.
Turns out it was his daughter. I didn't notice that her name is spelled S-Y-D.
Right.
N-U-I. Not a problem. She was quite good. I mean, she's good in the role. I don't have a problem with her. It was just a bit of a letdown when I realized, oh, that's the Sidney Poitier they're talking about.
Right. I was kind
of
like, holy shit, Sidney Poitier working with Quentin Tarantino. My God.
Which is going to be awesome. Not really a surprise because, you know, he's worked with a lot of people.
Right.
Rolling back just a touch, I forgot about the commercial between the movies. There's a commercial for Acuna Boy's restaurant.
Oh, man.
It's just a straight-up commercial, which, you know, in the middle of all of these bizarre trailers was hilarious. But apparently the reference goes back to a movie called Rolling Thunder from 77. They're also mentioned in Kill Bill Volume 2.
Oh, did you notice at the beginning of Death Proof that they originally have the title screen for Rolling Thunder for like half a second?
Mm-hmm. It was Thunderbolt they had for about half a second. Okay. That was the original title.
And then they just click this black thing over it. Mm-hmm.
There's a reference to BJ and the Bear that kind of caught me off guard. Because it's these two young guys making the reference.
That's true.
I don't think anyone under 35 remembers that show.
That's a good point. That's the problem that you've always pointed out with Tarantino dialogue is that, you know, all the characters are Tarantino.
Well, yeah, and that gets really obvious when they're talking about car movies.
Yeah.
And a Vanishing Point and whatever. That was Tarantino's voice, not the characters.
Right.
I've actually dinged Clark, so I can't think of his name. Kevin Smith. I've dinged Smith more for that than Tarantino, but yeah, Tarantino definitely did it in this one.
I mean, he does it in all of it. I mean, they're both very similar filmmakers in that regard, or writers, you could say.
Right.
I mean, I think they're different directors, but writers, they're very similar.
Right. Now, I do have to give it points for the Zatoichi reference.
Oh, yes.
You know, he's asking her about, Kurt Russell is asking her about, Stuntman Mike is his character's name.
Yeah.
About her job, you know, how she's a DJ, and he saw a billboard somewhere. And in the background, you can see her name on a billboard, and she points it out, and she's like, yeah, it's right there, Zatoichi. By the way, Willem Dafoe, John Malkovich, Mickey Rourke, Sylvester Stallone, John Travolta, and Ving Rhames were all considered for Stuntman Mike before Russell stepped into the role.
Russell's perfect for
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the credits he was talking about were real.
Yeah.
He was actually at the Virginia.
Right, yeah.
Which I was kind of thinking, like, was he really the Virginian? I mean, that's an early 60s
He's been around
TV
for a while.
Show. But yeah, he was, you know,
he started
a
young
kid.
And they did a really nice job of making him sort of less creepy as the movie went on. I mean, he's always creepy.
Yeah.
But you kind of start to like him. And then he just turns evil. I mean, and I knew he was going to be evil, but I still kind of liked him.
Well, that's the thing. He sucks everybody in. Like in that opening scene.
Yeah.
And in those opening 45 minutes. he really does, up until that point where you think he is just going to drive her home almost, you know. Yeah. You're kind of surprised that, wait, he's not actually going to. There's still going to be like a violent thing going on here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. That's the whole point of this. But, I mean, because that's the thing. you're on this whole 45-minute exposition thing where you forget what you're even watching.
Right, right.
It's the girls out, and they're having their drinks, and, you know.
Which was the exact point. They were swerving you the whole time. They were trying to get you to forget what's going to happen. Because it is very obvious that he's going to be the bad guy.
And, yeah, you do invest so much in it, you're kind of like, wait, this isn't the movie?
And then we get to the set. Well, we have the spectacular death scene.
Yes.
Which I need to see again and again and again. And then we get to the second group of girls. Two stunt performers, two actresses, one of whom is played by Zoe Bell, an actual stunt performer. And we start with this dialogue scene that's just as stilted as most of the dialogue in the first half.
Yeah, it's almost like they're the same characters for a bit there.
Yeah, yeah. It's they're kind of generic. In fact, in the credits, they're just called the girls.
Just, you know, played by different actresses. They're almost like you could interchange Sidney Poitier for one of them and Rosario Dawson for another. I mean, it's just, you didn't give them much personality and vary them.
Right, right.
In the end, there is not much of a point to have different victims.
Well, they weren't that different from the original group of victims until we get to the important part.
Oh, that's true. They had a certain set of skills to quote Liam.
Yes, yes, exactly. Zoe wants to buy a car, or she wants to try out a car. This was after the egregious car movie scene where they're talking about Vanishing Point, and someone was selling a car just like the one in the movie. So they go to check it out. She doesn't want to buy it. She just wants to test drive it. And she talks, what was the character's name? With the gun. Well, the other stunt performer, whatever her name is. She talks her into doing, what did they call it? Oh, yeah.
The half mast?
Ship's mast. She talks her into going with her to play ship's mast. Which, from what I saw, wasn't really a thing until this movie. You know, nobody really did it. It wasn't like Ghost Riding the Whip, which was already played out before Thanksgiving referenced it. But with ship's mast, you tie ropes or belts to the top of the windows in on each side of the car. You climb out of the passenger side and lay on the windshield holding the ropes. And Zoe Bell actually does this. It was great to see the actor clearly performing the stunt.
Oh, yeah.
And you could kind of get a feeling when they're about to go off to do it. They leave one of the actresses, Lee, behind, who was played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I did not recognize. They leave her behind, and you kind of already get the feeling that she got the better part of the deal, even though they left her with this creepy guy.
Right.
Because you know stuntman Mike has to make another appearance. It was obvious he was going to attack them when they were playing ship's mast.
Well, yeah, you're just waiting for the moment.
But what you're not prepared for is the action scene that happens. There's a car fight with Zoe Bell on the hood of the car, you know, with the ropes. Like I said, one of the best action sequences I've ever seen.
And it goes on for a bit longer than it should. There's plenty of points where she could have gotten off safely.
I was happy with every second of it. I just was just enthralled.
But right, the fun of it was having the chase scene with the person hanging from the bonnet of the car.
Yeah, and it wasn't just the chase scene. It was a car fight. They were bumping into each other. He was rear-ending them. And then he drives off into a ditch. And they don't ride off immediately, which was weird. You know, it's movie logic. They just kind of sit there and look at him. And I totally forgot about the gun.
Oh, yeah?
After the ship's mast. I was shocked by it.
You fell for Chekhov's...
I did fall for Chekhov's gun. Actually, almost literally. Pretty much literally. Along the same lines, I loved Zoe's "I'm okay." I saw it coming, but, you know, you think she's dead. But,
well,
yeah.
They set that up, too.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole, you lands like a cat.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. They set it all up, but it was still... I was totally pulled in and just riding on the emotion in this scene, which is unusual for me. I don't really have a problem suspending disbelief, but I completely fell for this one.
Well, the problem with most chase scenes in movies, I think for the last, 20 years maybe, is there's never an unpredictable chase scene.
Right.
You pretty much know that the good guys are going to win most chase scenes. But in this, it, it's up for anybody. Well,
because he won, because the bad guy won the previous chase scene.
Right.
And you don't know that these girls are the heroes.
Right. I mean, he could just be moving off. He could survive and move off to find more of another set of victims.
The bad guy could win in this one.
Definitely. So it did actually have an element of suspense, mm-hmm. which is very rare for most chase scenes in movies, I think, for at least the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. So they take him off the road, and he decides to drive off. You know, he was satisfied with the little fight.
Right. Oh, it was a lot of fun.
They decide to go after him.
Yes.
And Zoe, you know, before coming back to the car, just runs over and grabs this big metal pipe.
Abernathy, played by Rosario Dawson, is like, you know, they were like, we better leave you behind. And she's like, fuck it, I want to get up too.
She wasn't a stunt performer, so the whole deal with her to go along with the ship's mast was that she stay in the back seat and stay quiet. So they're going to let her get out before they go after him. And she's like, no, fuck that. I want him dead. So there's another big chase scene, but the opposite way. They're chasing him. They're rear-ending him, trying to take him off the road.
Well, yeah, because the whole point was that they explained this in the hospital, was that it was a sex crime.
Mm-hmm.
That his, you know, ramming his car into the right. girl's car was his way of raping them and pretty much killing them at the same time. And then, of course, when the tables are turned, she talks about fucking him up the ass.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think you can spoil anything in this movie. We're beyond the pale with that at any rate.
Well, there is the very, very end. Like, the pretty much the last, I don't know, what, 3 minutes?
I may have missed something. Well, we'll have to discuss that. What I was going to say is, I love that they beat him to death instead of shooting him.
That, right?
They punch and kick the shit out of him, literally kill him. Abby curb stomps him to finish the deal. They don't shoot him. The gun is only used twice in that initial scene.
Well, yeah, she misses most of it.
Well, she catches him in the arm.
Yeah, she gets him in the arm and then misses him and then runs out of bullets.
That's right. She ran out. I forgot. And so they beat the shit out of him, literally. They beat him to death. And I just enjoyed that. It was just a nice, visceral ending.
All that violence that Tarantino loves so much.
Yes, yes. He finally got to do all of it as brilliantly as he wanted.
I think the only thing missing would have been like a high five or something. They practically did. It was a very team effort.
Right.
It reminded me a lot of a violent version of Men at Work.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. A commie bastard reference would have been perfect.
Yeah.
I just wanted a post-credit scene where they take the car back.
Oh, yeah.
That would have perfected it. On to sequels and remakes?
On to sequels and remakes. Well, obviously, the sequels are the trailers.
Well, there's, of course, Machete and Hobo with a Shotgun, which have been made into full movies. But both Rodriguez and Tarantino have said that they are interested in making a sequel to Grindhouse.
Huh.
Tarantino said that he wants to shoot an old-school kung fu movie in Mandarin with subtitles in some countries and release a shorter dubbed cut in others for his segment. It has also been reported that by Rotten Tomatoes that Edgar Wright may expand Don't into a feature film. According to Eli Roth, he and Wright have discussed the possibility of pairing Don't with Thanksgiving for a Grindhouse sequel.
Oh, okay.
Roth is quoted as saying, "We're talking to Dimension about it. I think we're still trying to figure out Grindhouse 1 before we think about Grindhouse 2. But I've already been working on the outline for it, and I would do it in a heartbeat." I really want to see Don't turned into a feature.
I don't know.
Just to see what they do with it. And I absolutely want to see a Tarantino kung fu movie.
Yes, I'm all on board for that.
I don't know about Thanksgiving just because we have Thanksgiving.
Right. You can almost say Thanksgiving, I guess, was...
is the full-length version of Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yeah.
Before I checked the dates, I was sure that they'd ripped it off.
Well, yeah, because Thanksgiving seems like such an original idea.
Mm-hmm. On to Brains?
On to Brains.
I had issues with Planet Terror, mostly the overuse of the gun leg, but the last part of Death Proof, that action scene made up for it. I'm going 4.5.
I think both of them needed to be edited down some.
Well,
I
mean, did get the unedited version.
I think that's the problem. I think I would probably be up there with you if I had seen a version that was, say, 25 minutes shorter mm-hmm. than what I saw. So I'm going 4. But I still recommend it because, I mean, the stunts are just amazing at the end of Death Proof.
Best action scene ever.
And I thought Terror was just hilarious.
It was really good. They just went too far with the silly humor. And again, if I didn't know Sharknado, maybe I would have appreciated it more.
I think if they just didn't have like the love story angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's not exactly a love story. It's a relationship drama about a couple.
Right.
About a wife leaving her husband because he's a violent psychopath is what it boils down to.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I don't know how bad he was about that. Well, but
given
anyway,
what he did with the needles, I think it kind of got across that he is a violent psychopath.
So if they hadn't done that, I think it would have been a lot better.
Mm-hmm. And what have you learned?
You just need to reach up.
And I learned that I really need to check the running times of a movie before we decide to review it.
Holy shit.
We've said many times we're never doing more than one movie in an episode ever again, and yeah, we accidentally did that.
Yeah, the one thing I did hear about this movie when it was in the theaters, that there were a lot of people that did not realize it was a double feature.
Yes, oh, I did have that in my notes. I forgot about it, yeah. And people were walking out after Planet Terror. It's widely attributed to the fact that most of the people in the audience weren't around when, you know, theaters did double features. They were too young to remember it.
Well, and even if you were, it hasn't been done in probably since like the early 70s, late 60s.
That's what I'm saying. We're too young to remember when theaters did that because, you know, if they even did it when I was alive, I was too young to remember.
Yeah.
All right. So until next time, when it will be episode 300.
The big 300.
And as we've said previously, we will be reviewing Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I was considering throwing in a gag and saying that, you know, we were actually going to review 300, but not after all, almost an hour of episode.
Okay, so episode 500.
It'll be 300. There we go.
300, sir.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You can also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. I think it's up through Beastmaster. I don't think I've thrown anything else in after that, which is like 3 after the beginning of the year. It's 50 Shades, the 2000 two-parter, and then Beastmaster.
Damn.
Unless we want to do Dress to Kill then, but for now, that's the placeholder.
So Michael Caine.
I still have fond memories of the shower scene. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. I wasn't sure till I got to that action scene.
Well, yeah, I didn't know if we were doing the car chase separately or if we were doing them together.
It is one movie.
I was pretty much giving them both 4. I figured.
For me, it was a 4 and a 5, and I just kind of split the difference. You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 401-436-8-CTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
They can go fuck themselves. Just take an hour less to do it.
Was that a Kurt Russell impression there?
I don't know. Or they could take a peg leg.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
You are.
You'll never see me again.
Thank you.
right, and what have we learned? Oh, that we did, what have I learned?
Yes, we did. I think this really took a lot out of us.
We're at 56 minutes, almost 57 minutes.